Danon Nutritia Campus is an open science education platform for healthcare professionals overseen by a not-for-profit foundation. The foundation is led by an independent board of medical professionals and academics with one clear goal: to advance the field of nutrition and health from infancy to old age through growing knowledge, training and education of healthcare professionals around the world in collaboration with medical and scientific communities.
In May 2020, a webinar was hosted by Nutritia around COVID-19 in pregnancy, breastfeeding, and infancy. A range of questions were asked by the HCP audience, and since then, a lot of new scientific insights appeared in the news. My name is Zoe Ellis. I'm a registered nutritionist and have been working for Nutritia for 5 years, and I'm specialized in nutrition in the first 1,000 days. Joining me today, of course remotely, is Dr. Sarah Jarvis, who is a general practitioner working in Shepherd's Bush, London. She also works in the mass media to promote health, is a health and medical reporter for The One Show, and a regular guest on The Jeremy Vine Show, and clinical consultant for health website patient.info. In this podcast, which is the second of a series of three, we'll be answering the top questions that were asked following the webinar, and Dr. Jarvis will go into all the recent science that was released since then. Hello, welcome back, Dr. Jarvis. I'm very pleased to talk to you again on this intriguing topic.
It's a great pleasure to be with you.
Thank you. In May 2020, you presented in the webinar that pregnant women are not necessarily more susceptible to infectious disease. However, immune system changes in pregnancy can be associated with more severe symptoms, especially towards the end of pregnancy. And in April, a research center report by the Royal Colleges of Obstetricians and Gynecologists and the Royal Colleges of Midwives reported there weren't more pregnant women admitted to the ICU, and in case of respiratory problems, these were milder. Has there been any updates since then?
There's been quite a lot of change since then, actually. Let's touch first, perhaps, on transmission of the virus from the pregnant mother to the fetus or the newborn. There was a study which came out right at the end of February 2021, which showed a single case of intrauterine vertical SARS-CoV-2 infection, which confirmed transplacental transmission. And that, interestingly, was followed by divergence of the viral genome. But the Royal College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists still says pregnant women do not appear to be more likely to contract the infection than the general population. And there is some evidence that women who, if they are going to pass it on during pregnancy to their baby, that it is uncommon. So whether it's from a transmission to her baby antenatally or intrapartum during delivery, it appears to be uncommon. If it does occur, it appears not to be affected by the mode of birth, whether you have, for instance, a cesarean section or a vaginal delivery, doesn't appear to be affected by delayed cord clamping, doesn't appear to be affected by skin-to-skin contact or by method of feeding. So breastfeeding does not appear to increase the chance of the baby catching COVID, or whether the mother and baby room in. So all of those things, I think, are very, very positive. But there is undoubtedly some risk to the woman if she gets COVID, particularly during the last trimester of pregnancy.
So you mentioned vertical transmission. What about the impact of getting COVID during pregnancy?
We've learned a great deal about COVID and severity of COVID during pregnancy over the course of the last 9 months since I last spoke about it. Certainly, we know that the Royal College of Obs and Gynae and the Royal College of Midwives still says women are not more likely to contract COVID. However, they may be more likely to develop serious disease, particularly in the last trimester of pregnancy, the last 3 months. So let me just put this into perspective. There was a very large study in the Journal of the American Medical Association, which came out in January 2021, which looked at women in America, 3,400 of them. And what they showed was that people who were Black or Hispanic, who were younger, who had diabetes or who were obese, were more likely to contract COVID. Now, That's interesting. Could that be because they're more likely to live in more deprived circumstances? They're more likely to live in more overcrowded accommodation. They're more likely to work in public facing occupations. Of those, 3.3% needed ICU admission. 1.3% needed mechanical ventilation. This is much higher, about 26 times higher than women who were not COVID positive, but who were also pregnant. But the good news, the death rates were still low. It was about 0.1%, one in a thousand. Whereas if they didn't have COVID, it was about 5 per 100,000. So 0.5 per thousand. About 1 in 1,000 people who had COVID had a heart attack. That was much lower in women who didn't have COVID. And people were a little bit more likely, not a lot, about 20% more likely to get preeclampsia if they had COVID. A little bit more likely, about 1.2 times more likely to have a preterm birth if they had COVID. And perhaps not surprisingly, given how much we know about the impact of COVID on clotting, they were 3.5 times more likely to have a VTE, a venous thromboembolism, in other words, a clot on the leg or on the lung if they have COVID. Now, we know that women who are pregnant already are much more likely than the general population to have a clot on the leg or on the lung. So perhaps that's not entirely surprising. But there was good news. Even though these are relative increases in absolute terms, the risks were still relatively small, much smaller than, say, for older populations. There was no higher risk of stillbirth. And although women were more likely to need mechanical ventilation or to die if they were older mothers, if they already had preeclampsia, if they had kidney disease, or if they developed a thrombotic illness, then there was still not a huge increase. Now, this very much chimes with the figures that we saw in studies, various studies which have been done in England. So a study in December in England showed that COVID-19 infection was not associated with stillbirth or early neonatal death either, which is really important. But the UK study suggested that though you are 3 times more likely to have a preterm birth if you have COVID than if you don't. What is not clear was whether women were, for instance, admitted to ICU earlier because they were pregnant as a precaution, whether they had an iatrogenic, in other words, whether the doctors decided they should have a cesarean section or a preterm delivery because of concerns because they were pregnant. But interestingly, of those 3 times more preterm births, which were seen in these different studies in the UK, about half were because of maternal illness, maternal compromise, if you like, and about 1 in 6 were because of fetal compromise. Then we go on, and if we just tease out a little bit more about this Black and minority ethnic groups, which in the UK is anybody of Afro-Caribbean origin, anyone of Black African origin, anyone of Black Caribbean origin, anyone of South Asian origin, including Indian, Pakistani, Bangladeshi, and so on. What we saw was that people in these groups are more likely to have COVID and more likely to suffer severely. And even when we teased out some of those factors, such as were they more likely to have type 2 diabetes, more likely to have heart disease, more likely to have high blood pressure, more likely to have low levels of vitamin D, more likely to live in overcrowded situations, we still found that people from these ethnic minorities, as we describe them in England, where they are minorities, although sometimes quite significant minorities, none of those things explained all the increase in severity.
So what would be your advice towards healthcare professionals listening that are seeing pregnant women regarding preventative measures according to the latest insights?
What I would say is that we can still recommend that women do not have too much to worry about, particularly in the first 2 trimesters of pregnancy. We estimate that about 3 in 4 women actually who have COVID have very mild or indeed no symptoms at all. This was a fairly small study of about 160 women, but even so, that's really pretty impressive. The vast majority of women who have COVID are not going to be severely affected. However, I would recommend, firstly, that women take all the sensible precautions that every woman should follow: hands, face, space, and ventilate. Wash hands really regularly. Use a face covering at all times. And in the UK, we recommend at all times when you are indoors and social distancing is not possible. Social distancing of 2 meters or more is not possible. Now, in some countries, those criteria are different. We know that the risks outside are a great deal lower than the risks inside. Space, social distancing, at least 2 meters apart from other people wherever you can. And if you can't be 2 meters apart, then at least 1 meter apart. And finally, ventilation. One of the main reasons that it is about 20 times less likely that you will catch COVID from somebody in the same situation in terms of distance and time together and so on, if you're outside than inside, is because of air circulation, which reduces the amount of aerosol spread. So we would always say that although indoors is more risky than outdoors, indoors with the windows open and good ventilation is much less risky than with the windows closed and no ventilation. So all of those things, but do be aware if you're pregnant that your risks will tend to be higher in the last trimester of pregnancy.
Now, last year, May, we could only dream of a vaccine. And now vaccinations have started, mostly in developed countries, and still facing the release of different new ones. Are you aware of vaccine studies performed in pregnant mums?
So the answer is the main trials have not been carried out on pregnant women. This was not for any other reason than because they were trying to get the vaccines out as fast as they possibly could. So the first vaccine against COVID-19 was approved in the UK on the 2nd of December 2020 after the Medicines Health Regulatory Authority, the UK agency, underwent full approval processes. None of the vaccines specifically have undergone clinical trials in pregnant women, but when they published update at the end of December, they'd looked at all the data and they confirmed the available data did not indicate any safety concerns or harm to pregnancy, and that vaccination in pregnancy should be considered where the risk of exposure to SARS-CoV-2 infection was high. So particularly, for instance, for, say, healthcare workers, frontline social care workers, people working in residential homes, perhaps people working frontline with the public in public facing roles, say in public transport, for instance. And interestingly, the JCVI also said that from their perspective, the vaccination risk to benefit ratio was likely to be such that vaccination should be considered where the woman had an underlying condition that put her at very high risk of serious complications of COVID-19. And we go back again to all those complications that we've seen both in the UK and the US study. So, for instance, having diabetes, having kidney disease, having preeclampsia, being overweight, being an older mother, being of Black or minority ethnic origin.
What's the current advice on supplementing vitamin D in pregnant women?
Well, for those people who are listening who don't live in England, we don't have a whole lot of sunshine. And of course, vitamin D is known as the sunshine vitamin. In the UK, about 90% of the vitamin D that we have in our bodies is actually formulated, made in our skin from the action of sunlight on the skin. It's actually a steroid, and it might almost not be thought to be a vitamin, but there we are. It is called a vitamin. And of course, it plays a hugely important part in osteoporosis, in bone formation and bone health, in muscle joints, but there are all sorts of other areas where vitamin D plays a role, including, of course, in the immune system. So in the United Kingdom, we know that, for instance, between October and March, the sun is not strong enough for us to formulate vitamin D in our skin. And this is a much greater risk if you have darker skin. So, for instance, in the UK, up to 94% of women of South Asian origin are vitamin D deficient in winter. Now, that's a combination of factors. They have darker skin, so they don't manufacture vitamin D as effectively because, of course, where people have, you know, if people came from South Asia, that's where their ancestors came from. They didn't need to manufacture it as effectively because they got a lot more sunshine. But then they've come to cold, dark, damp old England, and they cover up often for religious reasons, and they're highly likely to be deficient, especially in winter. Vitamin D, of course, is a fat-soluble vitamin, so you don't need to take a supplement every day. But we do recommend that in the UK, therefore, all pregnant as well as breastfeeding women take a 10 microgram, 400 international unit supplement of vitamin D every day, all year round, not just between October and April. And certainly I often recommend that women who are at higher risk of deficiency, particularly women, say, with darker skins or women who cover up for cultural reasons, should be using that 800 international units, 20 micrograms a day. We also know, of course, importantly, that deficiency is associated with adult respiratory distress syndrome, and that is a known complication of COVID infection. So for me, that's just yet another reason for recommending that women do take a supplement during pregnancy.
Thank you. We've now come to the end of this podcast session. Dr. Jarvis, thank you very much for sharing your valuable knowledge, which I'm sure our listeners will find incredibly useful. I look forward to speaking to you in podcast 3 about COVID-19 in infancy.
My pleasure. Thank you very much indeed.
To keep up to date with future episodes of Dunon Nutrition Campus, the Feed podcast, make sure you subscribe on whichever platform you listen to your podcasts on. For more updates on the show, or for more educational content from Dunon Nutrition Campus, visit www.dunonnutritioncampus.org.